Hello, everyone. Welcome to Word with Dr. Michael David Clay. I'm not sure if any of you would agree that it's anything but awful to feel stupid. Maybe you would, that it's okay. Maybe you could see it in a high-minded sort of context. Go ahead and admit it. It's a bit of stupid in all of us. I just don't like to be reminded of it. One of the reminders, though, that seems to come up far too often is I will do stupid things. And what do I call it? Stupid? Maybe even that. I've got to be careful. That sounds so derogative. I'll be shamed for using such a negative, critical sort of term. But stupid is, in the infamous words of Forrest Gump, stupid is as stupid does. And to me, what stupid really means is, it's an obvious thing. I should have never done that. I wasn't paying attention. Where was my mind? I should have remembered before I shut the door and locked my keys in the office. I should have been more careful to not bang into the wall with my big toe and think that I was going to die from it. I should have done this. I should have done that. I should have seen it coming. And maybe there's a case that could be made, well, Dave, there's just a lot of things that you can't see coming, and I've done that. I've used that logic and reasoning with my patients, those that I provide care for. But at the same time, it doesn't help me necessarily to just write it all up to chance or circumstance or even as much bad luck. Wrong place, wrong time. Because there's a lot of those sort of events that I know it's my fault. I know I wasn't paying attention. I was caught up in the moment. There was a lot going on. My mind was swirling. And with that, then, I don't know that my critical thinking, not criticism like stupid, my critical thinking, like to keep me from feeling stupid and maybe acting stupid, my critical thinking just couldn't kick in. It could not be engaged. I could not engage in it. Where was it? It was still there. It's just the emotions, the pace, the stress, the demand, the need, the want, the desire, the lack of a moment for myself to just calm, think it through, be rational. I do that a lot when I'm in the middle of a project, is what we call it around my house. Could be any number of things. For me, generally projects are things, though, that on the front end seem a bit monumental. I think I'm going to have enough time to do them. I even try to think them through so I won't make too many mistakes, stupid mistakes. But it's generally something, when I call it a project, talking about personal definitions, my definitions for life. When I call it a project, it's usually something, typically something I've never done before. You would think, just something new I've done before. And so if I could get that project out, how to take on new things, challenges, yes, you can go to YouTube. Yes, you can read up on it. Yes, read the directions, read the instructions. Yes, think it through. Yes, consider the logistics. Yes, have the right tools to perform whatever it is. Usually it's building or repairing for me, those sorts of projects. But I still find myself in the middle of it, trying to learn, feeling overwhelmed, feeling a little triggered, being very emotional, running out of time, having something else come up that I did not anticipate. All of that puts me in a state of hypervigilance. And with that, I make stupid mistakes. I'll give you another example. Go to a city that you've never been to before. And yes, you can use your Siri or whatever to give you the driving app. Instructions, directions. But you're still going to be overwhelmed. And you're going to make a turn in a direction you probably shouldn't have taken. You're going to be vulnerable to almost getting involved in an accident. There's just example after example where novelty and new situations really can result in us feeling stupid. But even accepting that most of life is going to include at least something new and novel, and maybe it's something you've done, any of the individual components that make up that particular circumstance, even the demands, a daily routine, a demand of daily routine, that could become overwhelming if you stack too many of them, one on the other, or you introduce them in novel ways. But adaptability is just that, addressing that element of unforeseen and novelty and confluence of all of these, even if they're routines that at times you think of them as mundane. If you put them all together, you're going to have to come up with possibly another way of doing them all, and you're going to have the risk or run the risk of something happening that you didn't see, or you're not going to be able to think through it sufficiently. What I've learned in those situations and what I counsel then out of personal experience is to take the moment, in the moment, when you're feeling all of that, even into anticipation of the possibility, the hypervigilance, to calm down. Take a deep breath. Count to 10. And in that, sort of disengage. I talked about engaging critical thinking in a constructive way. Problem solving. Rationality, reasoning. Emotional regulation. Management of the feelings. All of the anxiety that goes with new situations. That level of stress and demand. But to do that, you have to also disengage all of the hypervigilance, all of the things that would then trigger emotion, threat even, until you can sort it out. That is evolutionarily programmed into all of us, that fight or flight response. It's adaptive because there are things that can kill you. Fortunately for us, at the place that we are in today context of human evolution, it's maybe not as important as it once was, but it's vestibular. I think it is vesticular, vestibular. I don't know. It's a vestibule. That's what it is. Of the past. It's still there. We still have it programmed into us. And it does take quite a bit of logic and reasoning to keep it intact. And it sort of tends to amplify itself if you don't take those moments to debrief, to think it through, to sort of slow it down. Psychology Today, January, February of 2024. To maintain focus, practice critical ignoring, by David Luden, PhD. To think critically, you need to be able to seek out sources of information, read carefully, consider the credibility of those sources, and reason out conclusions on your own. In the days before the internet, critical thinking was the most important cognitive skill that informed citizens could have. While critical thinking is still important in the digital age, Max Planck, Institute of Human Development psychologist, Anastasia Kuzareva, and her colleagues argue that critical ignoring is an even more important skill today. With the overabundance of information they claim, we need to be able to sort the wheat from the chaff, deciding what's worth our attention and what isn't. For most of our history, we lived in small groups in which emotionally charged information typically signaled threats or opportunities. In that environment, letting our emotions guide our attention was generally a successful strategy. But today, if we clicked on every sensational item on the screen, we not only waste a lot of valuable time, but also potentially pick up a lot of false information. To protect ourselves, we need new ways of interacting with information. For Kozariva and colleagues, that means critical ignoring. A complementary skill to critical thinking in which we intentionally control our environment to reduce exposure to low-quality information. Critical ignoring, as the research team describes it, involves three strategies. Self-nudge. To avoid low-quality information and retain more quality time for ourselves, we should aim to remove distracting stimuli from our environment. In this way, critical ignorers are like successful dieters who know it's easier to avoid unhealthy foods if they just keep them out of their homes. Similarly, if you set up your digital environment with attention-grabbing items kept out of sight, or set time limits for your browsing, you'll have a better chance of success than if you rely on willpower. Read laterally. To improve judgment about the credibility of information, open a new tab next to an item to find out more about the source. Many sites have a particular agenda that makes them more interested in influencing than in informing. Their headlines may deceive or even be contrary to the actual facts. A check of the original source should expose them. Don't feed the trolls. We all know that there are malicious actors on the internet whose goal is to spread false information and hurtful rumors. It can be tempting to respond to them to try to set the record straight, but trolls don't care about that. They just care about provoking your emotions. So instead of rewarding them with your attention, ignore or block them. Critical ignoring is a key component of cognitive functions, such as problem solving and decision making. When we have too much information, we become overwhelmed, and it's more likely that irrelevant information will lead us astray. Effective problem solving and decision making rely on heuristics or rules of thumb that winnow the available information down to manageable chunks so that we can come up with good enough solutions. We have more information at our fingertips than ever before, but most of that information is of little value. Worse, a considerable amount of it will just lead our thinking astray. More than a century ago, William James remarked on this point in his Principles of Psychology, writing, "The art of being wise is the art of knowing what to overlook." This observation is even more pertinent in the information age, when the most vital aspects of critical thinking may be learning what to ignore. Again, Psychology Today, January, February of 2024. To Maintain Focus, Practice Critical Ignoring by David Luden PhD, who is a professor of psychology and the chair of the Department of Psychology at Georgia Gwinnett College. So critical thinking keeps you from feeling stupid, maybe, or doing those things, as I pointed out, that I hate when I think of it that way, that I've done, and then don't realize, well, really, I was at a disadvantage because I did not do the smartest thing, and that is to realize how easy it is, vestibular. That's wrong, I know it is. I apologize. We'll have to look it up after the podcast. Whatever that legacy is from those early days of humanity, that when I feel threatened and I'm feeling overwhelmed and I'm feeling a bit disoriented, whether I'm in a new city, whether I'm taking on a new project, whether it is because I'm in a rush, and even if there are routine projects, routine tasks, they're not necessarily projects, even if they're mundane routines, depending on how they're all put together and the level of the demand, the stress is associated, my fight or flight is going to kick in. My threat response, my emotional thinking will kick in. And if I don't manage it, it will take over. And with that then leads to stupid. And of course, I'm analyzing all of that. Once I've done something, and in that way, kind of blown it all up, and it's all fallen apart, and I'm left with a mess, and finally I can't move forward, I have to stop for a minute. I suppose you could take from, I did, the article. This is supporting the idea of routinely practice debriefing. Recognize how easy it is to get caught up in that. Recognize that critical ignoring really is turning off the fight or flight. But the way that the body works, the sympathetic nervous system shuts down so that the parasympathetic nervous system can kick on. But if you don't shut it down, the parasympathetic really can't, because evolutionarily, in terms of adaptability, in those kind of legacy terms, back when survival, our needs, were so tied to primary drives, when the demands were not, can I make it to work on time today? Or what's the best route? Or I'm running about 5 minutes behind and I've cut it so short. I've caught myself up in a jam, my routine, that I don't even have a moment to spare for the sake of that extra moment of sleep or whatever it is that's distracted me that morning and put me behind. I need to calm down or I'm going to stub my big toe. I'm going to forget something. I'm not going to remember something. I'm going to, unfortunately, make a stupid mistake. I'm going to, unfortunately, maybe put myself in danger because I might be driving too fast. All of that really could be avoided if I just understood that is not only a risk, it's probably wired into us at some level, but it's also wired into us when we do apply routinely rationality, reasoning, meditative practices, pacing of our life, mindfulness, self-care, allowances for unknowns. Even though they may be opportunistic, they may initially come across, as the article pointed out, as threats that would trigger again. But the only reason we could take anything like that and make it an opportunity is to recognize in a creative dynamic, we have some input into it. But determinism, that idea that you would lose your critical ability or your ability for critical analysis and critical thinking by becoming overwhelmed with all those emotions, recognizing that, that is then how to take threat and turn it in opportunistic ways to your advantage. It is of highest order adaptability to understand we can do that. That is, I presume, what gives then, in an evolutionary way, us even the parasympathetic operations of higher order thinking. And I don't know for a fact that we're the only creatures that can think in those terms. It's all phenomenological. It's all from the human perspective. If I were an ant, I may know wisdom beyond human wisdom. But for the sake of where humans are and what position we seem to have been given in an evolutionary sort of way, when it comes to survival of the fittest and highest level of adaptability, that seems to be an advantage. Use it. But practice it. Routinely make it part of your daily routines. Pace. Don't get caught up in so much of all of that. Even as much things that really don't matter, even as much things from yesterday or tomorrow that you think will matter, staying mindfully in the moment that you're in is also a skill. You can learn that. You can manage that. You can mitigate that. Not entirely, because again, it's programmed into us genetically. But that's why we have critical thinking. But critical ignoring is like turning off the fight or flight and the emotional thinking, because you can't have both of them going on at the same time. That's why the system evolved or developed the way it did. You can't do both at the same time. Survival, if it really truly is life or death, you can't sit around and think about it too much. You have to be reactive. There's an advantage to that. And again, like my projects, you can think through, you can try to avoid, you can do risk management, you can do risk mitigation. But you're still going to always get caught up in a moment. But don't feel stupid necessarily, because you can't always see everything as it would come at you. Some things happen that just happen, that are really at some basic level a bit challenging, even to the extent of possibly life or death, that you can't be responsible for. And you've got a split second, reactively, to take some action. But as much as, again, you can think it through and try to go to YouTube and read the directions and instructions, you still run the risk, except that you would then be aware enough to know or have at least some ability to objectively get out of the subjective, the emotional, and to analyze it rationally, reasoned, logical, hypothetical, reasoning, thinking, enough so to stop and to think it through, as you do, contribute to stupid, and contribute to blowing it up, and contribute to it falling apart, and contribute to the mess that comes from not doing that. And though projects are different than the composite of all the projects that make up your life, really, in some ways, that's what your life is. A lot of moments. But if you can do that, manage each project, your life is probably going to solve itself if you do it that way. But if you try to look at it in such mass and you try to say, oh, it's overwhelming and I can't wrap my arms around it or my head around it and I can't really see it for what it is because I'm just so caught up in the momentum of all of the emotional thinking and the constant demands. Maybe you do need to sit down with somebody who can help you sort it out. I do think that the advice that the article provides to filter, cut back on what you know to be triggering in this way, or you know to be unnecessary overload with the internet as the example, to read laterally so that you can sort of cross-reference and in that way check original sources so that you'll know what you're reading, whether it is really true or fact that might contribute to truth or not. And certainly stay away from what you know is sensationalism. And with that, the idea that that is an incredible marketing strategy. Get you all worked up and then sell you something when you least expect it, when you're least able, at least the demand seems to come out of nowhere. Oh, well, this is the fix. Now that I've got you all stirred up. And with that, then, you're not in the best place to do this critical analysis, critical thinking. Sign on the dotted line. Sign here. Watch those things because that is evil. We could call it that. Nefarious. Ill-intentioned. Manipulative. And there's plenty of that going on in the world today. But should you use artificial intelligence, computers, as it was originally something of a way, either representative, we created computers, so it captures a lot of human logic and thinking as we put that all together, whoever they are and we are, in putting it all together. It certainly wasn't me. I wasn't smart enough to do that. But it's even still, I think, used in psychotherapy kind of context because it's a great representation of human thought. Brain operations. And that's why the better the software, the more useful the programming. If the app is intuitively programmed to you, whether it is as humans think or you individually as a person, just be careful though, because once that begins to happen, the distinction between you and it becomes lessened, and then they can sneak in all of those nefarious aspects, all the consumerism, the commercialism, the exploitation of need, primary drive even. This is so important to you that you're not going to survive if you don't have this or do this. But I think the article really then offers what we offer in psychotherapy sort of context. We just don't talk about computers and internet. But that's a great analogy. Maybe it's an allegory. For what we do in psychotherapy. But if you can understand that, then as the article gives you bullet points, as to some things that you can do to maintain your focus, apply them to you personally. It's the same stuff. But if you should need to sit down and speak to someone, then call someone, reach out to someone. You can do that through the Psychology Today directory of providers. Find one, reach out to them. Again, all vetted. You can call me if you'd like, 304-523-9673, Word. You can email me at drmdclay@thewordhouse.com. Find us online at thewordhouse.com. Facebook and YouTube at Wordhouse. Or you can come back for the next podcast. But even in the podcasts, the intention is to help you to understand not only where your resources are, should you need them, but maybe even in a preventative sort of way with the hope, not even, maybe even, genuinely with intent, in a preventative sort of way, maybe you won't need that. Maybe it's not necessary for you to seek out that level of help. Maybe we can do this just through information and the sharing of that perspective, empirically based, research evidence-based, hypothetico-reasoning thinking-based, logic, rationality, science, research methodology-based, abstract article, journal article-based. All of this information, it could be very helpful. And if I share with you how it generally gets applied from this side of the relationship and the conversation, maybe you can just do that for yourself. Don't practice this at home. Or if you do, then do it with caution and care. I wish it were such that I could say it quite that way, but you know what I mean. Do you really need one? Only you know. A psychologist, psychotherapist, psychological counselor, social worker, psychiatrist. But should you, that should not be a stigma, because it doesn't make you stupid. It just means it's the human nature to get caught up in such things. And we do have to not only develop, acquire, actualize in developmental terms those operations, but the skill of learning how to implement them and engage them. And that's what the best of, I think, psychological counseling and psychotherapy, as well as the podcast, is all about. Until we get a chance to meet again, I want to thank you for joining me today on Word with Dr. Michael David Clay, and I want to wish you the best of good mental mind health. Until we get a chance to meet again, thanks.